The Royal Commission into Misconduct in the Banking, Superannuation and Financial Services Industry continued into its sixth round this week, where it heard examples of alleged misconduct into the superannuation and insurance sectors. To speak about how life insurance companies have been engaging in misconduct, I spoke with Susan Quinn, Senior Policy Expert at the Consumer Action Law Centre. I asked her what has been revealed this week at the Royal Commission.
Well, what we've heard at the Royal Commission this week has been pretty shocking, even for those of us who've been watching it for years. Firstly, we've seen huge numbers of possible legal breaches, including 300,000 of those by just one small insurer. And then we also heard some really shocking stuff about a young man being bullied into buying life insurance and then his father, who Consumer Action Law Centre assisted, trying to cancel that and facing a lot of barriers. It looks like this industry puts obeying the law a distant second to making sales.
What kind of misconduct have they been doing to gain the interest of the Royal Commission?
Well, so far this week, we've mainly seen life insurers direct calling people, so cold calling people, and selling them various types of life insurance. What they've done is possibly not obeyed the law when it comes to what insurers and others have to do when they cold call you and try to sell you their products. There's a general ban on cold calling, but insurers can meet a few requirements in the law, tick those off and continue to do what they're doing. It looks like they haven't managed to tick off all of those requirements, though. The second thing that we've seen is the awful sales conduct. So a young man who clearly didn't understand what he was being sold was somehow sold life insurance. And when you listen to that call recording, it's quite sickening to hear the pressure and the lack of care for what he was saying through that salesperson. And really, salespeople are human, like all of us. They're heavily driven by commissions to sell more and also by quite tough KPIs and requirements to make sales and hold on to policies.
And speaking of the people that have been speaking at the Royal Commission, what kind of testimonies have we heard?
We've also heard from a lot of insurers about what's going on behind the scenes and how it comes to this for customers. So there've been some pretty almost comical examples of the kinds of incentives put in place and the kinds of lines being spun to salespeople to gee them up to make a lot of these sales.
Stockbroker Marcus Padley spoke to the ABC and said insurer Clearview got a slap on the wrist. And do you agree with this assessment?
It's hard to know what the regulator's looking at when they hand out penalties. So I think the big value of this Royal Commission is that the issues are aired much more effectively and we can understand the problem much better than we have in the past. Insurers have flown under the radar for a long time and it's good to see that ending now.
What changes do you feel need to be made within the industry?
There are quite a few things that need to change in insurance and we and other consumer advocates have been talking about these things for years. The obvious one this week is that cold calling and selling any financial product should be banned. It's obvious that the law as it is isn't working with some conditions applying and that insurers are just jumping through loopholes or just not complying with the law. That would be the first thing that really needs to change for this week. We also have seen insurance policies that are pretty poor value. They're expensive and they're full of exclusions and conditions that mean it's really hard to make a claim on them. We'd call them junk policies. They just shouldn't exist. And insurers need to stop selling those. Really, insurers need to accept the onus for that and start treating their customers much more respectfully and not shifting them products just to meet sales targets.
What kind of conditions do they need to meet to be able to cold call people?
Under the corporations law, if a company wants to call you and sell you life insurance or any other financial product, they have 8 or 9 requirements that they have to meet to be able to do that. And so the kinds of things that they need to do, only contact you with certain hours. They need to give you an opportunity to register on the do not call register, or they need to allow you to select the time and how often they can contact you. They have to give you a product disclosure statement, which basically your insurance policy. They need to tell you about the importance of that product disclosure statement. And they also have to, strangely, give you the option of having that product disclosure statement read out. And product disclosure statements aren't protecting people or giving them a heads up of what the policies are. They're just too long and complex for most of us to get our heads around.
I also spoke with Nathan Rappaport, Senior Associate at Slater & Gordon. The law firm announced this week they will be spearheading a class action lawsuit against banks who had not put their members' super funds into the best investments. I asked him how Slater and Gordon got involved with this class action.
Well, we've been following very closely the Banking Royal Commission over the last several months. And in the last round of hearings, there was a focus on superannuation. And the evidence that was heard at the Royal Commission really showed some quite damning conduct, in particular the big banks and we think also AMP, concerning how they operate their superannuation funds. The evidence suggested that, in particular, the way they invest their cash is not in the best interest of their members. And the trustees of these superannuation funds, their most important duty is to act in the best interests of their members. And most importantly, that means above their own interests and above the interests of their parent companies. What we've seen, for example, with Colonial First State, which is the superannuation fund trustee owned by the Commonwealth Bank, is that when members' superannuation money is to be invested in cash, and that might be members who have chosen to invest in cash, or they might be in a balanced fund and there's an allocation of cash, what Colonial is doing is investing that cash with the Commonwealth Bank. And they're not shopping around to try and find the best interest rate for members. And Commonwealth Bank know that, so they're not offering Colonial a competitive interest rate. And we think members are being shortchanged through this.
Have industry super funds been affected at all during this Banking Royal Commission?
Well, the Royal Commission did look into industry funds just as much as retail funds, but what was seen was that there was very little, if any, misconduct going on at the industry funds. And obviously we're not involved in the inner operations of any of these funds, but it appears to us that the primary reason why the industry funds have not been engaging in misconduct is that they have no reason to. They're operating solely to benefit the members, and the retail funds are operating to make a profit. And that's just a very clear difference. And, you know, we think it's no coincidence then that the Royal Commission found there to be a great deal of misconduct going on in the retail funds and almost no misconduct at the industry funds.
You're going to be going after any of the banks that have been engaging in misconduct as revealed in the Royal Commission. But when it comes to these lawsuits, have you made public what your plans are going to be?
So we've announced yesterday that the first case we expect to launch will be against Colonial First State, and that will be followed most likely by one against AMP. But we are certainly looking at all the big retail and bank-owned super funds. So there's a very good chance that over the coming months we'll launch further cases against the others.
And when it comes to these class actions against these banks, have they been engaging in different kinds of misconduct, or has it broadly been the same across the board when it comes to superannuation?
So the way they invest the cash, there seems to have been a real trend that each bank-owned superannuation fund invests most or all of their cash with the parent bank. And so it seems to us that they've, in a sense, have been hiding in plain sight. They've all been doing it. They haven't even been trying to hide that they're doing it. They've obviously been thinking that there's nothing wrong with what they've been doing. But we think, on our analysis, that they're not getting the best returns for members and they're letting members down. So we do think that there is trends across the industry amongst the retail funds of similar kinds of behaviour. In terms of the fees, some of them operate in slightly different manners, so we're investigating each of them individually. But certainly there is a clear trend amongst all the retail funds that their fees are quite a bit higher than, for example, industry funds, which are not trying to make a profit at the expense of their members.
Where can listeners go to get more information about this class action?
So we've established a website which we encourage all members of the public who think they might have been affected to register at. And that website is getyoursuperback.com. There's a short questionnaire on that website where people can answer and fill in which super funds I've been a member of. And then once we kick off these cases over the coming weeks and months, we'll get in touch with people and let them know which cases they're eligible to join. But ultimately, we're going to seek to represent all affected members of these super funds. So whether people find out about this and register or not, we'll be seeking to represent them and to obtain compensation for them from the banks and the trustee companies.